Today on Maine Calling, the meteoric rise of sports gambling and other kinds of gambling too. This weekend is Super Bowl Sunday, and in case you've been hiding under a rock, yes, the Patriots are back, led by the 23-year-old phenom quarterback Drake May. Do you know what the point spread is? Have you already placed a bet on who will win? If so, you aren't the only one. The American Gaming Association predicts that $1.7 billion will be wagered on the Super Bowl. You heard that right, billion. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we discuss how something that used to be seen as tawdry is now mainstream, sports gambling. And it's not just sports. It's everything from weather to news. Our guest, the author of the new book, Everybody Loses. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. Quarry Cottages at Highland Green, committed to providing low-maintenance living and offering custom homes in Quarry Cottages, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And by Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Gambling on sports isn't new, but the rise in the different ways to place a bet on a game is really overwhelming today. And it isn't just sports that has found an eager audience for placing a bet. You can now bet on weather forecasts, baby names, and even the news. My guest today is a journalist who has studied gambling for a while now. Danny Funt's work has appeared in The New Yorker, The Wall Street Journal, and The Washington Post. And he's the author of the new book, Everybody Loses, The Tumultuous Rise of American Sports Gambling. We invite you to join the conversation. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Danny Funt, welcome to Maine Calling.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So I'm thinking about, well, let's just say you don't watch a lot of sports, but lately you've tuned into, because you live in Maine, you want to see Cooper Flagg play on the Mavericks, or maybe you're watching the NFL playoffs because the Patriots are in them. Watching TV sports, holy cow, is really different than it used to be. The ads for the sports betting are constant, and it's not just the ads. The sportscasters are talking about the odds as though it's a natural part of coverage. Danny, when did this happen and why is it okay?
Seemingly in the blink of an eye, which was something I wanted to get to the bottom of in my book, why was it that for a century, sports leagues, many politicians, their media partners and sports media, all of them said that gambling was this existential threat to sports? They even used the word evil sometimes to describe how damaging gambling would be to sports and to fans. Obviously, they gave an exception to Nevada because it's been legal there for so long, but this was a top priority for sports leagues to resist for so many years. The way that they did a 180 seemingly overnight and now are such enthusiastic backers of gambling and have integrated it with the business of sports to such a profound extent, that's really remarkable. And as you were saying, even if you're not a gambler, and millions of Americans have taken up sports gambling in recent years, but even beyond that group, it's inescapable if you turn on a game. I remember, you know, the examples are endless, but when I was watching Game 7 of this past World Series, such a remarkable clash between the Blue Jays and the Dodgers, as the leadoff hitter is digging into the batter's box, they interrupt to say, "And here's a same game parlay you might want to go bet," you know, moments before the first pitch of the biggest game in baseball. So that has a lot of people worried, whether that's a good thing for sports and a good thing for all people, even beyond fans. The reach of this is so broad.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about that word parlay in a couple minutes. But first, I want to talk about the change, because any of us of a certain age remember one of the biggest scandals of our childhood, which is the Pete Rose gambling scandal. Would that be a scandal anymore?
Yes. Athletes and managers are still forbidden from betting, especially betting on their game. So Pete Rose committing the cardinal sin of sports, that's still a huge no-no. I would say we're seeing more incidents of that as, you know, the opportunities to gamble are so vast. The things you can bet on and fix, if you're so inclined, are limitless. That is a whole new ball game. But it's interesting, you know, the Pete Rose scandal was in the late 80s, and that's a big reason why the leagues petitioned Congress to impose this federal ban on bookmaking outside of Nevada. And that law was on the books and pretty successful and uncontroversial until roughly a decade ago. And ultimately, the Supreme Court struck the law down, and sports has never, you know, changed in such dramatic ways since then. So, yes, I think they're dreading, you know, today's version of a Pete Rose. But from the people I spoke with for my book, the odds of that happening are greater than ever now.
Let's talk about the scale. I read that there will be $1.76 billion bet on the Super Bowl this weekend, which makes me think, well, that's just one game. What are we talking about annually? How much money is bet on sports annually in America?
The Super Bowl, as huge as it is on the betting calendar, only represents about 1% of what's bet on sports over the course of a year. So,
whoa,
I'm seeing estimates that, you know, a good amount more than $150 billion are wagered legally every year across the country. It continues to grow, even in states that have had legalization for a while. You might have thought there would be an initial frenzy and then people would recognize they're losing a lot of money and pull back. That hasn't been the case. New York is a good example. In a recent week, people across the state wagered more than $500 million in New York alone. And that was a record for a state that legalized sports betting 4 years ago. So the arrow is undoubtedly still pointed way up. I would say the thing that really strikes me about the Super Bowl is it's not that remarkable anymore. It used to be such an exception as far as people willing to bet a lot of money and bet on a lot of different things besides who would win or lose. These exotic side bets that you can place, that was always a really noteworthy aspect of the Super Bowl. And you might have heard a lot about that, you know, what color Gatorade will be dumped on the winning coach and on down. Now you can bet on things like that in basically every game year round. And the way that that might be a road to excess is worrying people, health experts for sure, but even people inside the industry are thinking, gosh, that's a path toward overdoing it.
What are the stats? What do we know about people who, you just used the word overdo it, but you know, gambling is an addiction. How many people out there are addicted to gambling, and is it more than before?
It seems that way. It's a strangely understudied category. And people I spoke with for my book in Congress, at these companies, all over, the researchers certainly, speculate that that might be by design, that the industry is resistant to studying of things as basic as how many people exactly are gambling and how much money are they wagering. Because if we had a clear sense of that picture, maybe the industry would face more scrutiny. But the typical rule of thumb was that about 1% of the population was susceptible to gambling addiction. In states that have had legal sports betting for a while, I've heard estimates that it might be closer to 6 or 8%. It's even higher among young men, who tend to be the target demographic for marketing. The thing that really strikes me is, yes, those numbers are concerning and could be the preview of a public health crisis. But a lot of people find that they're getting in over their heads, even if they don't have a you know, specific gambling problem, as a doctor might describe it. A third of sports bettors say they felt ashamed of how much money they've lost after the fact. Half of sports bettors admit to something called chasing losses, which is when you lose a bet and then you keep betting and betting to try to make up that money. It's a really dangerous thing to do because you're likely to just dig deeper and deeper into a hole. But That's a telltale sign of a gambling problem. Half of sports bettors admit to doing that. And so I think, the worry is that, yes, we have a rising rate of problem gambling, but people who have a problematic relationship with gambling is much bigger. We could rattle off stats for days that show that, but I think the evidence of that is really getting undeniable.
Well, let's talk about what's different today. Is it because of the rise of online gambling? Is it this how easy it is to be gambling right on your phone?
That's a big piece. If I had to boil it down, I'd say it's two things. It's the embrace and the endorsement of pro sports and college sports. Their stamp of legitimacy has a lot of weight, especially among young people who say the sports are saying this is okay, that this is the new way of engaging with sports. I think that has a big impact on the normalization of gambling. The other thing, yes, the fact that across the country, roughly 95% of bets are now placed online is such a game changer, just because if you're betting from your couch or the sports bar or in your seat at the game, the ease of doing it is so different than if you had to chase down a bookie, who's taking bets under the table, or even use some sketchy offshore website where you don't know exactly if you're going to get paid if you win. The ease of gambling now is, a radical new world. The other thing is that by betting online, you can bet so much more and so much more often. And I've heard people compare it to a slot machine now, where you used to place a bet before a game if you were a gambler and then sit back and bite your fingernails and watch the game for a few hours. Now you're on your phone constantly banging out these bets, even on things as minute as the outcome of the next play or the next possession in a football game. That's a big growth area in gambling, and it's what the leagues were so excited about when they were being convinced to embrace this, was this is going to keep people hooked on their TV set or however they're watching, because they're constantly entering bets. I'll just say lastly, it's pretty intuitive that betting on your phone would open the door to all of these new concerns. I've spoken with a number of lawmakers, notably Charlie Baker, the former governor of Massachusetts, who signed a betting bill as one of his last acts in office before becoming president of the NCAA. And President Baker said, I spoke with a lot of college students and college athletes and saw all these problems that legalization has created. And I somehow never connected the dots that betting from your phone would be a can of worms. And as he puts it, he wishes sports betting had stayed in Las Vegas. But of course, cat's out of the bag in much of the country.
Well, at least that's what you said. Cats out of the bag in much of the country. How many stands ha how many states have legalized online sports betting?
So the total number that have legalized any form is 38 plus DC. Missouri was the latest to do so just last December. There are a number of states, not many, but some, Washington State comes to mind for whatever reason, that limit it to in-person betting. In Washington's case, only on tribal land. Their argument is we want to boost tribal economies, but we don't want this ubiquitous gambling scene taking over across our state. But by and large, people can bet online now, and so many people would much rather do that than have to go to a casino. So a lot of the growth in the industry is happening online.
And I'm guessing that even if you live in a state that in which online gambling is not legal, if you're a young person with a phone, you figure out a way to do it.
There will always be black market operators. One of the arguments for legalization was they said, hey, there's so much illegal gambling happening that's not taxed, that's not regulated, there aren't consumer protections. Legalization will drive out the black market. And that clearly has not happened. I mentioned roughly $150 billion are wagered legally every year. I've heard credible estimates that $50 billion are still wagered illegally. And then besides explicit criminal bookmakers, there's this vast gray area of what are sometimes called sweepstakes or prediction markets, or Daily Fantasy, all of them offer products that are virtually indistinguishable from sports betting, but they're just a growing piece of this pie too. So I think that's a lot to contend with, and it seems like they're, it's going to be very difficult for anyone to get this to be a purely legal industry. There's always going to be reasons that people are drawn to the black market.
As you know, Maine has legalized online sports betting. It's not online yet. Will be in a few weeks. Here, the Indian tribes will have the licenses, will run this. What advice do you have for the tribes? What advice do you have for Maine? What have you learned from other states that folks here ought to know?
The biggest thing I could say, speaking with regulators and some lawmakers who kind of have buyer's remorse about how things went, because oftentimes it has this odd sense of urgency to get sports betting off the ground. Sometimes they'll say, oh, the Super Bowl is right around the corner, or March Madness, or other events that tend to generate a lot of gambling and thus tax revenue. And it takes a while to actually get the regulations in place. So, in answer to your question, one that I think clearly a lot of states regret is allowing deceptive promotions to seduce new customers. The phrase risk-free bet was blasted all over the country. Another phrase, no sweat bet, implying, I think, pretty clearly that if you do one of those bets, you could bet a lot of money, but you won't have any risk of losing your money. So you might have heard a $1,000 risk-free bet, and that sounds so appealing. Unfortunately, if you read the fine print, you realized there was a lot of risk involved. You could come away losing everything you put on the line, and that just seems blatantly unfair. And yet, it was a huge part of how the industry recruited customers. So I would hope that as states get off the ground, they don't make that mistake again.
Danny, we're going to go from sports to something else. I read an article that you wrote a few weeks ago, I believe it was in the New Yorker, about how cable news networks are entering into agreements with gambling sites. I've been a reporter for a long time. I've never worked in a newsroom where this would even be in the realm of possibility. What the heck is the thinking behind? First of all, how would that work? And what is the thinking behind it?
I'm with you. I speak with journalism veterans who say, like, they would never have dreamed of doing this. They're kind of in shock, as it sounds like you are too. For CNN and CNBC, which were the two companies that I highlighted in the piece, they have a deal with a prediction market called Kalshi that offers ways to bet on all sorts of things, including sports and politics and a lot of other current events. They're paid, CNN or CNBC are paid to insert references to Kalshi odds during their coverage. So they might be covering a cabinet secretary who's under fire and then say, and if you were to go on Kalshi and bet on which cabinet member in this administration will be the first to be ousted, here are the odds that say Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, will be the first to go. That, you could understand there's an advertising appeal for any of these operators, any of these platforms. The other angle that I heard is the case with CNBC is they'll be paid referral fees for funneling their audience toward placing bets on these platforms. So if you were on their website and you clicked a link to go bet on this site, CNBC would get some sort of commission for that. And I can't help but see the obvious echoes to what happened with sports media, where, as you were saying, they never would have dreamed of even acknowledging gambling's existence for decades. And yet, a lot of these companies were in such dire straits financially, fighting for survival. And they just felt like they were in a tough place to turn down a huge new revenue stream. And the consequences of that, I think, we're still coming to terms with. But the same thing seems to be happening with more mainstream news networks and news organizations. And I think those couple of companies and the Wall Street Journal recently signed one of these partnerships. I have a feeling from people I spoke with in my reporting that that might be the tip of the iceberg, that a lot of news organizations, especially as we enter midterm elections and ultimately the next presidential election, they'll find it's irresistible to get in bed with these companies.
Danny, how do they defend it? I mean, this is so beyond the ethics of a newsroom that I'm familiar with. No product placement ever of any kind, never mind gambling.
You bet. I wish they defended it more to begin with. It's hard to get them on the phone to answer some of these questions. But what I gather from press releases and the little bit I've been able to speak with representatives of these companies is the odds tend do have an interesting predictive value. These are in some cases efficient markets, and the wisdom of crowds, as you might hear, does have a usefulness in terms of gauging the probabilities of events. So, for a while now, people have been sort of losing faith in opinion polls, and these prediction markets have bled into political coverage where people would say, and gamblers are giving this candidate, a 57% chance of winning. That might have some news value in moderation. I think the thing that's a lot harder to defend is integrating that in all sorts of coverage where the value is a lot less clear, and also just using betting trends as a peg for a story in its own right, where you're just covering the gambling as opposed to using the gambling to illuminate what you're covering already. It seems clear that these companies, these betting platforms, their goal is to turn the news into fodder for gambling. And that, I think, is a hard, tough pill to swallow for journalists.
Well, and I can see mentioning the odds is something that's interesting, but being paid to mention the odds crosses a really, really hard line, or what I thought was a hard line. We're talking with Danny Funt. He is a journalist who has covered the gambling industry for a long time. His new book is Everybody Loses: The Tumultuous Rise of American Sports Gambling. What are your questions for him? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about the prevalence of sports gambling and, of course, the rise of betting in many other areas of daily life. My guest today, Danny Funt, who is author of the new book, Everybody Loses: The Tumultuous Rise of American Sports Gambling. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us a brief email. That address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Landon, who's calling from Brewer. Hi, Landon. Go ahead.
Hey, I just want to ask a question. Well, I'll give some brief context. I mean, I work as a shift lead at a grocery store. I see, like, gambling myself all day. I get people to pick threes, fours, make a bucks, you name it. I watch them use a scratcher machine, and it's very normalized by state governments already in some ways because we already do the lottery in a lot of places. So my question for him is this a kind of like a gateway? We're not like talking gateway drugs, but like, is this a gateway to getting addicted to sports gambling where you start with scratchers and such?
That's interesting. I hadn't heard of that. I think what it is, it's definitely a gateway toward is more online gambling of all sorts beyond sports. I know Maine is maybe on the verge of legalizing online casino gambling. That's been a hot topic across the country. The idea that you sign up to bet on sports and, it's a commercial or your game's about to start and the platform says, "Hey, while you're here, why don't you, while you're waiting, why don't you go play some blackjack or roulette or poker or what have you?" That is, if we're talking about the dangers of sports betting, that's a whole other realm that has a lot of people, including at sports books, very concerned. So I think that is the path of entry. I'm not so sure about other forms of gambling, but I do think when people have gambling problems, they tend to find anything under the sun that they can bet on, including conventional forms of lotteries and other stuff. So if sports betting, is a starting point where you already love sports and you're being egged on by the broadcasters you're watching or your columnists that you respect or whatever to Start placing bets. Yes, that can be a road to a lot more gambling.
I'm wondering, listening to Landon's question, Danny, one of the big differences it seems to me between a lottery and sports gambling is that with a lottery, everybody accepts that that's just pure chance. Whereas I can imagine somebody's mindset of thinking they really know something when they're placing a sports bet. They've studied the statistics. They've got a hunch about this player, and so there's a little bit of a little more maybe ego involved.
Oh, absolutely. And who's more egotistical than sports fans? How it's sort of like 80% of drivers think they're above average drivers. I think a vast majority of sports bettors think they're winning bettors and they can outsmart the bookmaker. It just does not work that way. But yes, you might sit down, hopefully you'd sit down at a roulette wheel or a blackjack table and know there are fixed odds that you're not going to overcome. Unless you're cheating. With sports betting, the house edge is just as difficult to beat over time. And yet, because you might think I know my favorite team, my favorite league, even my favorite sport better than whoever's setting the odds, I can beat this. That's very seductive. The other thing is, people know that those more traditional forms of gambling are gambling. You'd be surprised at how many people don't consider sports betting gambling. Even people in recovery for gambling addictions tell their counselor or whoever they're getting help from, I viewed this as investing or a side hustle. And they might have said, I was doing a lot, lotteries and playing casino games and stuff. And that was like my recreational gambling, money I was willing to lose. Sports, I deluded myself into thinking I had a real shot at winning. And that's why, it's so easy for people to get caught up in it because that temptation is really easy for sports fans who think they know, better than everyone else.
Landon, thanks for your question. Danny, for somebody like myself who does not gamble, and frankly, I think it sounds scary and not much fun, what is the appeal?
I can't remember which company it was. I think a lot of these slogans are pretty on the money as far as boiling down the appeal. And one of them was make any game the game. And the idea is you could be watching the most irrelevant, forgettable game imaginable. And if you put enough money on the line, it feels like you're watching the Super Bowl or the World Series. Your heart will be racing, you'll be on the edge of your seat. You'll be so much more invested than you would have been otherwise. That's very tempting for people. The other thing is, it allows you to, put your money where your mouth is. If you've got an opinion on the game and you feel like, oh, this, bench player is going to get, this is his day because someone's injured, or, oh, this receiver in a football game has looked good recently. I'm going to ride a bet on that, on that hunch and try to make a lot of money. That's very appealing to people. The rush that you get is undeniable, I think. I'm not gonna deny it. I've been in those shoes myself. I understand how fun it can be, and how exciting it can be. I also realize how easy it is to look up and say, "Gosh, I lost how much?" Especially when you're betting on your phone. So it's a slippery slope.
Well, you acknowledge that you have gambled in the past, Danny, and I'm wondering, after doing the reporting and the research that you have done for this book and for other articles, do you still place a bet from time to time or not?
No, it's been about a year. I think it's not a coincidence that I had my first child about a year ago, and I'm sort of counting pennies for that reason. So I feel guilty blowing money on gambling. But two things really got to me as I reported this book and that turned me off from gambling for now, at least. One was hearing from bookmakers and professional gamblers at how unbelievably difficult it is to make money. Not only do barely 1% of customers actually come out ahead, but if you are coming out ahead, these companies will do everything in their power to cut you off so you don't keep winning. That is a big turnoff, I think. Ultimately, you get tired of depositing money again and again. And the other was reporting this book, I just was left so troubled by how much people are being preyed on, how much these companies take advantage of the most vulnerable customers. Even hearing people at these sports books saying they don't feel good about some of the industry's tactics with getting people, coaxing people into overdoing it. And past the point, I just felt a little guilty patronizing a business when I'm reporting things like that. So it's been about a year since I placed a bet.
Don on Facebook wrote, "They aren't in business to give you money. Remember that." And this is the point you're making. Fewer than 1% of people who do sports gaming win? That's talk about terrible odds.
I know it's deceptive though, because that you see all this advertising, and there's no doubt that the advertising is suggesting this is a way to win money. I used to drive by a billboard near my apartment that said, "Turns out watching football can really pay off." And the words "pay off" were underlined. And I got to speak with the head of an organization called the Responsible Online Gaming Association. That's all of these sports books are members of it. Their idea is they're going to self-police themselves to look out for customers. And one of their core tenets that they're trying to convey is sports betting is not a way to win money. That might be the number one thing you should keep in mind if you're betting responsibly, supposedly. So I asked this person, the leader of this organization, "What do you make of this billboard? Because it seems like it's sending the exact opposite message." And she said, "Well, I don't know how people are going to read that billboard." So I think that's what really frustrates people. It's not just that it's so difficult to make money, it's that the way the business is advertising tells an entirely different story.
We'll go to Rose, who's calling from Gray. Hi, Rose, go ahead. Or Rose it? I'm sorry, Rose, go ahead.
Rose, hi. Well, you know, online gambling can be such an addicted thing. These poor young men that work so hard, blue-collar workers, and that they, you know, are with their buddies and they do it. And it can break down their self-esteem so bad that they sometimes can't even pay for their rent.
Rose, it sounds like you know someone this has happened to.
No, I just think it's got to be true. Yes?
All right. Rose, thanks for your comment. But you hear, Danny, the concern in Rose's voice. Do you share that concern?
Undoubtedly, I feel it's, you know, we're definitely most sympathetic to people who are already in a difficult place, who get caught up gambling as a desperate way to get out of their situation. People of all incomes and backgrounds can develop gambling addictions. It's brutal in that way. Hearing your listeners call, the person I thought of is someone I highlight in the book who was a fifth grade teacher in Connecticut. Who, when Connecticut legalized, he saw all these ads. He, as we've been discussing, he's a big sports fan. He thought, "I can win. You know, I know football and other sports well enough to make a little money off this." And he was, you know, teaching from home a lot during the pandemic, so it gave him a lot of downtime to be on his phone betting. And it unraveled so quickly, where he was betting tens of thousands of dollars at a time. And he talked about the shame, you know, not just from a financial sense, but knowing that he was putting his family in such a financial hole, that he had this problem that he didn't want to own up to. And when he finally came clean, even his wife had no idea that he'd been betting for years at this terrifying rate. And I think that's one of the scariest things about gambling addiction. It's a invisible affliction, you know, you don't smell it on someone's breath. You don't see marks on their arms where they've been shooting up, but just the idea that your spouse could be oblivious to gambling at that level, you know, really worried me. And it's such a telltale aspect of this, that is why it can really devastate people and their families.
Rose, thanks for your call. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we're talking with the author of the new book, Everybody Loses, The Tumultuous Rise of American Sports Gambling. Danny Fund is with us for the hour. What are your questions for him? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or find us on social media. Danny, one thing we haven't talked about yet is the impact of this on players. You talk about players being threatened, being harassed, even when they did something terrific and exciting.
Yes, I begin the book with that. A heartbreaking story of a college basketball player who was on Purdue men's basketball team a couple of years ago. They were the number one seed in the postseason tournament. And this guy had hurt his knee early in the season, and he said, I'm going to postpone surgery so I can practice with the team and cheer them on from the bench. He was not getting any playing time, but he was just that determined to be a good teammate. In the opening game, he got in the closing seconds. Purdue was up by, well, a comfortable lead. So in the last minute, they emptied their benches. He gets the ball, swishes a three-pointer for the last basket of the game. And you could just tell watching that his teammates were overjoyed. This was such a special moment for this guy who'd been so selfless that season. And then back in the locker room, as players tend to do nowadays, he goes on social media, starts reading his direct messages, and just one message after another was destroying him in the most brutal, cruel terms possible. And the reason why he figured out was because the point spread on that game was 27, and his three-point basket had caused Purdue to win by more than 27. So people who bet on them to not cover the spread, to not win by 27 or more, lost their bets in the last minute. And just the idea that that would be something that would mar, the most storybook moment, in sports is so sad. This is not rare either. It happens all the time. Athletes describe getting hate mail like that on a game-by-game basis. I highlighted it to start the book because somehow the leagues and these sports books argue that there actually isn't any more gambling happening now than in prior years. It just all used to be illegal, and now they've brought it above board. That's just obviously not true. And the fact that the harassment and threats toward athletes is reaching such a fever pitch in a way that it never used to is one of many clear signs to the contrary. The online harassment is so ugly. I've heard people say, think of however bad you might be envisioning those messages, it's way worse than that. But beyond what happens online, there are stories of enraged gamblers stalking athletes at their team hotel or at their home. A coach in the NBA named JB Bickerstaff said that he got a text on his personal phone from someone saying they knew the identity of his kids and where he lived. A manager in baseball resigned this past season, Mike Schilt of the San Diego Padres, because he was so tired getting death threats from gamblers. And where all this seems to be leading is what the former chief security officer of the NFL told me, which is, as he put it, it seems like it's only a matter of time before some deranged gambler tries to murder an athlete for costing them a bet. And that might sound alarmist, but I'm telling you, from all the signs we're seeing, sadly, that's not out of the question. In fact, it seems almost inevitable now.
We'll go to Barry calling from Ossipee, New Hampshire. Hi, Barry. Go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon or morning, I guess. How are you?
I'm good. I'm
curious. Oh, good. Glad to hear it. Me too. I don't gamble. But probably for this reason. You see, my parents are both deceased, but my father sold a business, and he was an obsessive compulsive gambler that nobody knew. And I'm wondering what kind of telltale signs there were. He sold his business for a few million dollars, and he gambled it all away until both of them were destitute. And nobody knew. I mean, it was not just sports. It was casino, playing card, anything that could be wagered. But we didn't know the extent of it. you always hear tell stories after somebody's dead. Tell you, I remember your dad doing this, or I remember, you know what I mean? So I'm just curious, are there any telltale signs that if you look for them, you can see this, and maybe you, I would have told my mother, take some money out of the account and salt it away someplace and hide it because it's going.
Yeah, Barry, that's a good question. Danny, I know you're a journalist and not a psychologist, but have you learned any clues? Are there any ways, any advice you can give people to keep their eye out for people they care about?
Well, it's such a sad story. I'm so sorry to hear that. Sadly, no, nothing comes to mind, but that's from the public side. And, you know, responsible gambling, if we're even going to use that term, has to be a two-way street. And if you're the operator, particularly an online operator that's seeing real-time data from your customers, they can see tells. They can see evidence of an emerging gambling problem. You know, if you're depositing money constantly after you lose a bet again and again, if you're betting in the middle of the night, if you say things to the sportsbook like, hey, could you give me a bonus because I want to keep betting, but my paycheck hasn't cleared yet. Could you help tide me over until I get that next check in the mail? Things like that are a fairly obvious sign that someone has a problem. And that's a real area that regulators are zeroing in on, and lawmakers, because sportsbooks are neglecting their responsibility. They're not intervening as much as people think they should be. And if they can tell someone has a problem, just like a bartender shouldn't overserve someone who's obviously inebriated, there is an equivalent of that with gambling. And it feels like the industry is dropping the ball on that.
What kind of, the analogy used was a bartender who overserves, and there are laws about that. What kind of laws are being constructed? What would work?
Deposit limits for one on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis. That might sound very paternalistic, but these would be so high that hopefully most people would never come close to depositing that much. But if you are betting at a rate that could bankrupt you or cause you to, you know, lose your house, then it would hopefully be a check on your betting. The other thing that's talked about is sometimes called affordability checks. And that, again, might sound like overstepping to insist on that. You might say, you know, it's your money, spend it how you want. But I think there's a case to be made, as has been, this is in place in Europe now, as their gambling problems are really out of control, that if someone, you know, starts betting and immediately is depositing tens of thousands of dollars and losing and then depositing more and more, maybe the sportsbook has some obligation to say, hey, can you afford to be doing this? Can you show us any proof of income or anything else that can make us comfortable allowing you to lose at that, you know, staggering clip? Things like that.
Yeah, if you apply for a credit card, if you apply for a bank loan, you show your income, you show what your other expenses are. Nothing like that, I'm taking it, to register for an online gambling site.
Yes. And, you know, even the industry has slightly come around on acknowledging maybe some of this is appropriate, but they're like, you know, we were talking about online casino gambling. I saw the industry suggested, hey, maybe there should be a limit on how much you can deposit, but it was like 20 grand a day. So I don't know that that's actually going to stop too many people from getting a problem. It's yet another reason why I think the industry can't exactly be trusted to self-police on this. We're going to need regulators and politicians to impose some tighter guardrails.
A question here from Jonathan. Are professional sports leagues worried at all about fans thinking that games are fixed because of the influence of online gambling? He says he's thinking of the current NBA betting scandal. In October 2025, a federal investigation revealed a major gambling scandal involving current and former NBA personnel. So Jonathan goes on to write, the case involved illegal mafia-associated rigged poker games and non-public information. So I guess the question is, are the leagues worried about this at all?
Absolutely. And, you know, after those arrests came to light, YouGov, the polling company, put out a survey that 65% of Americans now believe some athletes are influencing their play to alter the outcomes of bets. So this is not some fringe conspiracy theory. This is a cynicism that's taking over the mainstream, and that's really damaging to sports. I remember an agent named Lee Steinberg, who's represented people like Patrick Mahomes and Manny Ramirez. He was actually the inspiration for the movie Jerry Maguire. He told me that, you know, a lot of what sports depends on is believability. If you think it's wrestling, if you think the outcomes are scripted or fixed, that's devastating. He said it should send a chill up the spines of the people in charge of these leagues that that level of cynicism is taking over.
We'll go to Kim calling from Brunswick. Hi, Kim. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I've been listening, and I just wanted to highlight, if I could, the act of self-excluding. I am 68 years old. I sort of got into adult children of alcoholics when there first were support groups, et cetera. And then I started and have progressively read, educated myself, and thought a lot about what do I call an addiction and what do I call something that the ability to self-exclude would help resolve or help one cope. I personally feel that addiction is when you're physically, biologically addicted to something and you really can't get away from it yourself without the help of, say, the medical profession. But I see so much of this in people close to me and in people not so close to me. And I tend to not like to read stories about people who have had this issue and that issue, and they've done this and they've done that. I just remember very early on in the Adult Children of Alcoholics books, and I had 4 years of really great psychotherapy to really learn to look at, you know, what happened in my family, what am I doing? And in the end, the buck stops at me. I have to decide what I'm going to do. What are the consequences? And I sometimes liken it to skiing. We look for 5 turns ahead. What's going to happen in 5 turns if I do this thing?
Kim, I want to, we're almost out of time, so I want to send a question to Danny, and that is about this whole concept of self-exclusion. We know that in casinos, there are people who can put themselves on lists and not be allowed in. Is there the same thing on online gambling?
Many states do have that where you can blacklist yourself. It's a fraught system, though, and there's a big push for national self-exclusion where if you're on this list, it applies anywhere you could gamble across the country, because there are a lot of places where you could self-exclude in one state and then drive 10 minutes and be in another state and be allowed to place a bet. And that's not going to work in terms of deterring people. So I have heard a lot of advocacy for national self-exclusion because, the ability to cut yourself off is an important tool.
Kim, thank you. We have a question here, an email from Emma. If I have $20 on Kalshi for Troy Jackson winning the Democratic primary, am I insider trading when I vote for him? What about knocking on doors? Troy Jackson is one of the many candidates we have for governor this year in Maine. Danny, so she's asking if I bet on a candidate and then I go campaign for him, is that inside trading?
No, that is funny, though, because with sports, you're prohibited from betting if you can influence the outcome of the game or the event. And clearly that's some version of that is in play with voting. I think often the campaigns themselves, campaign staff are not supposed to be betting on elections. But this is a can of worms that election betting invites. And it's one of the reasons why people like Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts are so skeptical of election betting, just because it inserts strange motivations in our electoral process, could kind of cheapen how we engage with politics, and open the door to all sorts of novel forms of insider trading. So no, if you're a voter, you're allowed to do that, but there are a lot of people who can influence the outcomes of things who maybe shouldn't be betting on, and whether we can stop them from doing that seems like a bit of a tall task.
This may be a big question for just a few seconds left, Danny, but what surprised you most researching this book?
I was surprised at how many people in the industry said they're concerned of the way things are headed. I thought they would be so defensive. Some of them were, to be sure. But hearing people at even at high levels at sportsbooks say customers are being mistreated, the advertising is dishonest, people who are the most vulnerable are being targeted and exploited, to hear them cop to that, I did not expect. I thought it was such an important takeaway in the book.
Well, thank you so much for spending an hour with us, and congratulations on the book. Danny Funt, the author of Everybody Loses, The Tumultuous Rise of American Sports Gambling. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Main Calling on Maine Public Radio.